You're listening to the Brenton Not On Tour Quarantine Cast. So far, he's taught you about good coffee.
Damn, Jimmy, this is some serious gourmet shit.
Good music.
I'm like this, you know, and then that becomes your thing. Music just does that.
And the secrets to good travel.
Exits. Okay, there's one back here. And there's probably one over by the wing somewhere.
Now, thanks to COVID-19, he's here to make sure that you're all good during this time of social distancing and self-isolation. So sit back and enjoy as he broadcasts from any number of exotic locations like Costa del Balconia, La Isla del Garage, Playa del Living Room, and the always magical Puerta Backyarda. And don't worry, he's already had the coronavirus and beat it. Still, maybe keep a mask handy. Here's BD.
Welcome everybody to another edition of the Brenton on Tour podcast. Corinne Lee, Rio Theater, my old friend, how are you today?
Hello.
Welcome, welcome.
I'm doing good.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's been a few months. I had you back, I guess, in January of last year before the world shut down. We had a little bit of madness take over after that snowfall. We were all kind of hanging out at Nimbus on a music panel with a whole bunch of different people, which we talked music and a bunch of different things, but also, you know, small venues and things like that, and sort of the struggles that you had to go to. And then COVID's hit, and then the world shuts down, and we have to talk about more struggles again. So
I know
we have to talk about more struggles. But anyways, this is Corinne Lee, owner, operator, rad person, Rio Theater in Vancouver, Canada, which is one of the coolest venues for live music and movies, and now a sports bar and everything. Let's do a little intro, Corinne, as to who you are for our listener base here who's just joining us for the first time. So,
yeah, well, I've been running the Rio for, how long has it been now? I think it's actually been 13 years that I've been running the Rio. So before that, I was producing a lot of burlesque shows in the community, and we were just looking for a venue. And so I found out the Rio was available, so I've been running it since then. And we've had a lot of battles along the way that we've had to overcome. We changed the liquor laws in 2012 because back then movie theaters were not allowed to have a liquor license. It was actually an outdated law from the 1920s that we had to change in order just for us to get a liquor license. And then after that, after we managed to make that happen, and we changed the law for theaters in all of British Columbia. So it wasn't just for us, but it also benefited other independent theaters in the province. And then a couple years later, we found out that the Rio was put up for sale and developers wanted to buy it and tear it down and turn it into condos. And we had just been getting in our stride and, you know, really doing very well. Business was growing. So this was really devastating news. So instead of letting it be torn down into condos and made into condos, we decided to raise the money and buy it ourselves. So we raised $8 million and we have a group of investors as well as the community that now owns the property. And it's interesting, when the pandemic hit, we didn't even realize how that would be such a benefit for us, because other businesses that had to deal with maybe not a less friendly landlord, we were able to support the theater as a landlord as well as a tenant. So that, I think, is one of the reasons why we've managed to get through this, you know, as well as, you know, the subsidies from the government and whatnot that has helped us, you know, while we've been closed.
So you guys physically own it, correct? Because it's part of a bigger kind of building, but that section of the building is actually physically yours. No one can kick you out. It's like,
yeah.
This is,
yeah, we
this
own is the, We own the brick and mortar. We own the whole thing. Yeah.
Right. Which would have been a big help because a lot of people are struggling with rent subsidies and all the rest of it that the government had to go through and try to help. But, you know, you guys, it just seems like a constant battle which for one of the coolest venues, and it should never be. And what I mean by that is you had to battle to get the liquor license. You guys raised the money, which was amazing. But then COVID hits, you got to fight all the, you know, you got to fight some kind of work through the rules to try to become something that you are not. You've got to pivot like everyone else. Everyone else seems to be able to pivot with no problems, but then you guys got to go through this red tape. And it just seems like the Battle of the Rio is a documentary. Is a documentary in itself. Yeah,
we've been jokingly calling ourselves the comeback kids, right. Just because. Yeah, it just seems every time we turn around, there's a new obstacle we've got to overcome, but we always come back, right. You know, so we always make it through, thank goodness. I mean, the whole thing with the sports bar happened because they kept closing down theaters, even though there wasn't an outbreak at any, there was no COVID outbreaks at any theaters. And yet we would, so in November when they allowed us to be open from July to November. We had no incidents, not one single, you know, incident of COVID. And so when they decided to shut events down and, you know, they closed theaters once again, at first we thought it was going to be a few weeks and then it just kept getting extended. And then it was after Christmas and it was pretty clear that this extensions were just going to go on and on and on. So that's when, out of pure frustration, when I could see all these sports bars busy with the hockey, that I just said, screw it, we're going to become a sports bar. And I honestly thought that the health authorities would see how ridiculous this was, but instead they just congratulated us on our ingenuity. And so we were a sports bar for 2 months.
Did they give you any kind of like insight as to the definition or why it works as a sports bar versus a theater? Were they like, oh, it's fine, you can put 150 people in for a hockey game, but not 50 for a movie? Which to me seems the biggest confusion through this whole madness is getting these clarifications as to the difference between the two. Because I've got friends who own gyms, they can't put people in. Because of they're not allowed to do small group training in like 8 foot increments with five people, but you can go to the Anytime Fitness or you can go to the rec center and run directly beside a person in a treadmill. So what kind of information did you get from the government that define the difference between the two of them? Because it's very confusing.
Yeah, what it was is that they just lumped theaters in this events category, and that's what we've been trying to get out of, because everything in the events category is like weddings, funerals, barbecues, you know, it's just all these social interactions that are not businesses. And so we were really frustrated that they had us in this category. Churches are in that category as well, but it's a lot harder to control most of those environments than it is our business. We were asking to be put in the same category as restaurants and bars because when people come to our venue, they come in small pods. They don't come in a big group of 50 and they don't all know each other. They come in their little pods. They sit in their little pod, they watch the show and then they leave. So, it's really easy to control the spacing. The theater is all mapped out so that you can't sit too close to anybody. That was really frustrating because I felt like the authorities just weren't really looking at it. And you could see that the lobbying from the restaurant association was influencing them. You know, they had a lot more lobbying power than we did. So there's not that many indie theaters in BC. So I think, we just kind of got ignored. Like we didn't even, you know, we would hear about how she was having these conversations with other industries on the regular. And yet we couldn't even get one conversation to try to get her to understand how our business operates. you know?
It's amazing because you know, I saw you tagging her and tagging the government all the time saying, hey, what about us? What about us? And no one fights harder. If you guys are in Vancouver, you will see Corinne on the TV quite often because she's fighting for the little business. She's been fighting as long as I've known Corinne, she's been fighting for the Rio, which in turn helps all of the small theaters because every win that you get helps them win. And it's quite something. And to persevere through not getting the answers, did you have to kind of create your own answers? It seems like it. It almost seems like, I don't want to say loopholes, but it seems like you've had to kind of really study on how to work through all of these things that are, you know, these feet that are on your head, right?
Yeah. Like when it was my idea to become the sports bar, and that's because I understand the licensing really well. There's no like sports bar license there. It's, you know, you have a liquor license and it's either food primary or it's liquor primary. Yeah. And so I knew I had the same license as any bar does. So that's where I was pretty confident that if I just called myself a sports bar, I could do it. And there wasn't really anything they could do to stop me. So that's why we had to go by the same rules as sports bars, which is you have to have the lights up. You can't have the volume that loud. We weren't allowed to charge for tickets. So people had to just come in and, you know, and watch the sports on the screen, but it wasn't like a ticketed thing. So it didn't have like, we wouldn't have been able to survive as a sports bar for very long because they made so many constraints that you couldn't really make much money off of it. Like you were just making money off concession, right? So so that's why, you know, we wanted to go back to being a movie theater as soon as we could, but it was still fun, you know, it was fun. You know, we were joking that, you know, here we are, a bunch of film nerds pretending to be jocks for a while. And it was pretty funny at programming. We'd be trying to figure out like what game is playing and like who's on the team. And we didn't
really have to bring it. Did you have to bring a jock in to guide you? All right, you guys need to show this game. You need to show this game. You need to show this game.
Absolutely. I have some friends that were giving me advice, you know, all along the way, because we really didn't follow any of it. So I needed to know like what do people want to watch? What teams are they, you know, interested in? So, and what was fun was, you know, we had a lot of Rio fans that weren't that into sports either. And they just came out just to support us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our busiest night, oddly enough was, well, we had the UFC of course is always busy, but then the other busiest night was RuPaul's Drag Race, which was really fun. Yeah. I just couldn't wait for like the government to try to tell me RuPaul's Drag Race isn't a sport, because that would have been fun to argue.
There's no, what did I say? There's no such thing as stupid questions, right?
No.
So what happens to the Rio if you don't get this, if you don't get the license to do the sports bar?
Well, if we weren't able to become the sports bar, then we would have just had to just stay closed for, you know, from November all the way till June 15th,
which there's no rent. It's just mortgage at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are surviving from using the subsidies, from the government, and like, you know, that's keeps our doors, you know, keeps us in business. But, it was just morale mostly, you know, like when you can't do what you love for more than 6 months, you know, and I mean, really it's been a whole year of interrupted, like even when we were open from July to November, it was limited seating, you know, we can't have live shows. So we haven't been the full Rio theater, you know, at its rocking at its best for more than 15 months. You know, when we shut down, just before the pandemic, we had just had one of our best Februarys ever. We had the Comedy Fest there, you know, so we're used to having a lot of, you know, a lot of dynamic, exciting things going on there and a lot of sold out shows. And yeah, it's been complete upside down world for over a year. And I'm really looking forward to that being over.
What is an ideal calendar for you? Like, obviously, full is the answer you're going to give me. Yeah. But what's an ideal mix for you? How does the Rio work best for Korean?
Well, usually when we're operating, it's about 60% movies and about 40% live. Yeah. I find that mix works really well because live shows are usually limited to more of the weekend, you know, nights during the week. And movies you can play on any given night, you know, like on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So I find I just really love doing it all, because anytime we focus just on movies, then I start to miss the live shows.
Yeah.
And then anytime we're just doing live shows, I miss the movies. So I really am somebody who loves all of the arts, and I feel like it's the best expression of the Rio is when we're just doing it all.
You had a bit of a battle with Cineplex, or at least you were going, you know, you were fighting for the little theater on that mm-hmm. side of it. How does the Rio compete? Like, I guess the dumbed down question in this scenario is, how do you get your movies? What movies are you allowed to show? Like, how do you decide? And I know you're more indie on Commercial Drive, which is probably just got its dedicated audience right there in that mm-hmm. area. But how does a theater of your size compete against Cineplex? And so, like, and that's for all of them, because I'd imagine you're all struggling with the same thing. Is there like a network of like people fighting for you to get you all these amazing movies, or do you have to be very specific and know your audience so, you know, you can satisfy that? I'm always curious on how you decide what movies work best for you and how you show them.
Well, the distributors decide whether or not you get permission. And that's why we were having to fight against the monopoly that Cineplex has, because, you know, it's usually no problem for us to get cult classics, you know, Big Lebowski, you know, Rocky Horror, stuff like that. But anytime we want to play a brand new movie, we are always told that it has to clear Cineplex first. So Cineplex gets first dibs. Hmm. And so we don't get it till they're done with it. But the problem is Cineplex will just move a film from one theater to the next till they've shipped it off to International Village. Is that what it's called now?
Sure.
It used to be Tinseltown. Now it's International Village, whatever it is. It's where movies go to die, basically.
Right.
So, you know, movies will be, you know, the movie could have been out for 6 months and it'll still be playing there. And so, yeah, we've had some very frustrating times where like a big movie like Parasite, we couldn't get our hands on it for 6 months after it had already been out. And sometimes we're getting to the point where it's already streaming online and we're still trying to get approval for them to let us play it. And, you know, the thing I think that frustrates us the most about that is, why does Cineplex think our little theater is such a threat? You know, like, right. why can't they share? You know, it's very frustrating because, you know,
what's it going to take to win that battle? Is there a chance for you guys, or does Cineplex and the distributors, do they throw you a bone ever? They're like, we want this movie everywhere. So Cineplex, we don't give a shit what you think. Every small theater is getting this movie as well. Do you ever get a bone thrown at you? But then maybe it's a shit movie like Fast and Furious. You're like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want something else.
Like, you know what it is the distributors are blackmailed, and I'm not afraid to just speak plain talk here.
Sure.
They're blackmailed by Cineplex, because if a distributor gives us a movie, Cineplex will say, fine, if you give it to the Rio, we're going to pull that movie from all of our theaters. And they literally will threaten that. Like, we've had the distributors tell us that. And so we've tried taking it to the board of, what is it? The Consumer Protection, is it? I'm forgetting the name of the board that we took them to, but it's all about, the Competition Bureau. We took them to the Competition Bureau. And we had recordings of distributors admitting that this was happening. And the Competition Bureau still said, oh, no, there's no problem here. So I don't know what the Competition Bureau is supposed to do, but they did not help us at all. So, and I was actually told that by people who tried to fight this situation, you know, previous years, They said the Competition Bureau won't do anything, and they were right. So yeah, I honestly don't know how we're going to, like, now that the pandemic is over, we're really hoping that there's going to be some, you know, some compassion, you know, for our industry. It's like, we just survived the pandemic, you know, like, now is not the time to be greedy and exclusionary and try to cut out indie theaters. So I'm really, you know, we've been trying to talk to the distributors since we've come back and just plead the case that, like, hey, you know, isn't there a way we can all work together here and not have to go through this cutthroat situation again? We'll see. We'll see how it plays out, because Cineplex has not done well with the pandemic either, right? So they've in some ways, I feel like they may have a harder time bouncing back than some of the indie theaters. You know, just because I think it's easier for us to space people out than it is at, you know, at a multiplex.
Are you a movie fan enough that you would boycott them, even if one of there's a movie you really, really, really wanted to see, like, but you know, you're never going to get your hands on it, but the only way you're going to see it is either wait for it to come, you know, on one of the streaming services, or you actually would consider going.
You know what? Occasionally I do go to Cineplex if it's some, you know, say the kids want to go and it's, you know, a big action film that, you know, I think that's something they do well, is big films like that. You know, other times I'm lucky because I own a theater. I know eventually I will get it. So there are times I have waited 6 months to see something just because I wanted to watch it in my own theater. But, you know, I don't blame people if they can't wait for their indie theater to get it. It makes sense that people want to see movies when they're current. And so the way they've got this monopoly, it kind of forces people to, you know. And that's one thing that we were arguing to the Competition Bureau, is that it's taking away the choice of the movie going public.
Yeah,
you're literally forced to go to the Cineplex because the indie theaters are not getting the content.
And is that not like that all over the world, or in America? Is it, or
it is, it is like that all over the world. In Canada, it's worse though, because Cineplex dominates 95% of the movie going market across the country. So they really have, you know, cut down your options to, for where you want to go see a movie. And that, you know, to me, that shouldn't be okay. You know, it's like in any market, if you're taking away choices from consumers, that doesn't seem right.
And I'd imagine with your clientele though, which is, to me, at least in that market where you are in that part of the city, there's a specific kind of movie that you likely have in that market. I know you play a lot of nostalgia stuff, which is awesome. You do theme kind of stuff. So it's always really cool. I always like to check and see what you got going on, because for the amount of, say, new release-ish kind of flicks you got going on, you also have this really great nostalgic kind of thing happening with, like, you know, Pulp Fiction weekend or Tarantino weekend or this weekend. It's really, really cool. Affordable. You can go and check these things back in the theater that you might have missed the first time. And I'd imagine it's crucial to your business to have that kind of theme and have those things happen. And I would imagine your market where you are doesn't want a ton of these blockbusters. I would assume, pull in a full house on a really awesome reviewed indie flick over if the Rio was showing, and I'm going to keep picking on them, Fast and the Furious 9 in that part of that part of Vancouver. Maybe out in Surrey in Chilliwack, that would work. But I'm just saying your market would, you have a bit more options for your personal demo in that area, I would think, to be able to try to fill
your house. Absolutely. There's movies that we just don't even want to play at the Rio. Like, I don't care about playing most of the superhero movies or, you know, all the big franchise films. We've done really well at films that don't play at the Cineplex. Like Fantastic Fungi was an incredible documentary all about, you know, mushrooms and the positive qualities of, you know, that you can get from them. And we played Fantastic Fungi for like 6 months, and people just kept coming. It was one of our top selling movies. And yeah, there's not many films that you can do that well for 6 months. So yeah, I feel like I'm still confident that we can still survive even with Cineplex trying to crush us, because you know, we've been forced to be creative since day one. We're always having to come up with new content, new ideas. So I'm confident that no matter what limitation gets put on us, we can find a way around it, because we just seem to be pretty squirrely that way. So
now you like, you were talking about how you like the mix between the live and all the rest of it. We can get into some of the great shows that have been there, but I'm not sure how many people know about you and the burlesque, and I think it's quite this alter ego of Corinne, or maybe it's the Rio Theater Corinne that we know is your alter ego, and burlesque is actually you. Yeah, but this is Corinne and the alter ego, I'll say, shamelessly, which is awesome, and definitely, and you perform at the Rio, you know, obviously supporting your own cause there, but supporting an amazing group of women and everybody. So dive in a little bit on the burlesque, because we've never spoken about this as far as just, we've done a lot of work together and we've over the years and all the rest of it, but how did the burlesque world enter your world?
I started doing burlesque shortly after I'd had a baby, actually. I was really? Just yeah, I was like 32, I remember, when I started doing it. And it's funny because, you know, you'd think that'd be something you'd start when you were younger, you know, you might feel more confident, but I didn't feel that confident when I was younger. And I also just wasn't really drawn to it. But as I got older, this whole exhibitionist side of me came out, and the just really fun loving and performance side. And then I met, you know, a big group of great women that were doing burlesque. And so it was just a really fun community to be a part of. And the Sweet Soul Burlesque Girls were the ones that I first got involved with. And that was in the early days of burlesque, when there was literally only two troupes in the whole city. Now there's, you know, I don't know, dozens of I don't know, maybe there might even be like 100 different troupes. There's a lot of burlesque dancers nowadays. It was just, for me, a really fun creative outlet, a great way to express myself. And the more I did it, the more I just found that it just, you know, really is an alter ego for me, where you know, my stage name is Shameless Lee, because just for the idea that, you know, we're kind of taught to be, to feel shame about our bodies, and sexuality and all of that. And so, you know, once you choose your stage name to give you confidence when you go out there. And so that name, Shameless, always gave me a lot of confidence. And, and she's, I definitely feel like she's part of me. Like when I'm, you know, my friends will say they know Shameless for sure, 'cause she comes out, definitely when we're, you know, when we're having some fun. And it's just been fun, you know, all the co-productions that I've worked on. You know, we've done like Star Wars burlesque, we've done
I can't believe I missed that. Do it every single year. Every single year you do the Star, or I've seen it and I'm like, we got to get down there, and it's like, we got to get down and see it. I think you and I even spoke about it. You're like, I think you had something that was on the way at the last time we spoke, and I was looking and the Star Wars burlesque was coming. I'm like, this is going to be amazing. Did you do Game of Thrones too? What else did you guys do?
Yeah, Game of Thrones burlesque was amazing. And that's one of my favorite ones, because I'm usually involved in that one as a performer as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, over the years, when I look back at all the, you know, crazy fun shows we've done, it's been a really good time, and the audience has been right along there with us. And, you know, that community is very supportive, because, you know, we all kind of understand that we're all there to be supportive and of each person's personal expression. So it's very body positive, very sex positive. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think it's a great community to be a part of. And so it was so awesome when I had my own theater that I could, you know, be, a, you know, kind of a home for other mm-hmm. burlesque performers and producers.
I'd imagine it's a bit therapeutic too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Just, yeah. Once you've done a striptease on stage in front of hundreds of people, you definitely, you know, have a certain confidence and overcome any kind of fears that way. I mean, usually my biggest fear is just remembering the choreography and, mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, trying to, you know, have your smooth moves. I'm never really that concerned about, the nudity side of it. I've always been quite comfortable that way.
So. This is the only picture I could show on this show. I mean, it's going to go on the net. It's going to go on the internet. As I'm sure people can find racier stuff if they want on YouTube and things like that. But you've got quite a selection there my friends go visit as you Corinne and at Shamelessly on Twitter and wherever, and you'll find her. And there's some great stuff there. So, but we'll just post this one.
Instagram is where I put most of my more burlesque stuff.
Sure. No, it's great. Good for you. And I think it's amazing that you, it's therapeutic. You've brought this community, you give them a home, which generally speaking, must be a struggle to find places to do it. I mean, geez, Vancouver is losing venues like crazy. I mean, everyone was stoked when you were able to do shows and then add alcohol to it. Right. And then, so it's just another venue that gave options for promoters to do shows, but also things like, burlesque and, just another, a great addition to the city, just a place that are you known as like the place now for burlesque? There's gotta be a few, but you haven't done it in a while.
We're one of the main burlesque places. Yeah. I mean, sometimes they want a bit more of a nightclub vibe. So there are some venues that provide, a bit more of that vibe. But yeah, we've got, you know, the nice big stage and they can use the visuals and all of that. So, mm-hmm. Also, you know, I am conscious that I try to make it affordable. We always do co-productions with people who I know are experienced promoters and I know can fill a house. If someone can fill a house, I'm happy to work with them in a way that makes them money and makes us money. Some of these smaller promoters, it's not as easy for them to, come up with the money upfront to be able to do a show. Mm-hmm. And so I have ways of working with people that, help support them.
There almost wasn't a Rio and, now you've got a place for people to go. Can you talk a little bit about the Save the Rio campaign that you had going on? Because it was a massively successful campaign, as far as I'm concerned, but you might have a different opinion about that, but just the press on it, the people that got involved, there's Kevin Smith there, mm-hmm. who's obviously become a buddy, for you and all the rest of it. But, how did that little thing start then turn into such a big thing after that?
Yeah, I was so blown away by the amount of support that we got, locally from celebrities, internationally, just everybody just kind of rose to the occasion. And I know when I first started, saying, oh yeah, we're going to raise $8 million to buy the Rio. I had a lot of people that thought, no way, that is not going to happen. You know, that's just a crazy idea. I don't know what it is in me, but for some reason, I don't get deterred like most people do. I don't get scared off of doing things that seem really hard to do. What I have learned is if you show up, other people will show up, right? So if you say, and then of course, the people you rely on most when you're doing something like that is the first supporters, the people who, it still looks like a long shot, but they're going to support you anyways. And once you get those people on board, then it just seems to attract more and more and more energy. And before you know it, the whole thing has come together. And yeah, it was, I kind of had to pinch myself at the end that it's like, wow, we actually did it. But there's a certain part of me that wasn't surprised, which is weird. I think it's because I just have so much faith in the community, and I've seen it. You know, when people came to help rally, to help us get the liquor laws changed, I saw how supportive the community was then. So I feel like I've witnessed the power of community firsthand. So I feel like there's just about, like, you could do just about anything if you've got the community behind you.
Mm-hmm. Was there was a lot of celebrities challenging celebrities. So how much, speaking of Shameless Lee, how much shaming went on? Like, where you're like, hey, listen, Kevin Smith donated. Ryan Reynolds, are you going to donate? Hey, Seth Rogen, are you going to donate? How many, when did the piling on of the celebrities start?
You know what? The great thing is we didn't have to shame anybody. They all just volunteered. Like, Kevin Smith volunteered. Like, they contacted us. Nice. He just came out and said, hey, I'll donate a couple of shows. And we took him up on it. And Ryan Reynolds just contacted us and said, hey, I donated. And then we, you know, followed up with him from there. And yeah, so each one of them came to us in their own way. Great. So it was pretty cool to see. I think, you know, for those guys that work, that, you know, they're celebrities working in the film industry, they also know how important independent theaters are, right? Because not every single movie they do is a big blockbuster, you know, in all the mainstream theaters. Sometimes they want to do indie things, or maybe they just have such a love for the craft that they just, you know, want to support an indie theater. So,
well, I'm so glad they did, because it's one of the best venues in the land. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Even though it's a sports bar now, which is cool. I was going to say, like, I don't know if you're showing the games and stuff right now. I guess you're going to.
We are.
I was thinking about this, like we've hired a Rio jock to tell us what to show. It just kind of cracks me up. So.
Yeah, we're opening. So we've been closed, you know, since they closed bars and restaurants back in March. So we've been closed for the last 2 months. So we're reopening as the sports bar on Friday. We'll be open for about 10 days. And then as soon as we're allowed to be a movie theater, which is June 15th, then we'll be showing movies again. But we will keep showing some of the sporting events, you know, like the UFC. We'll probably keep showing RuPaul's Drag Race when we can. And, you know, and any of the really big games that people want to come out for.
Does it change anything for you? Like, do you have to change a bunch of things in order to be able to do movies and concerts and everything right now?
So
you're good to go on all of it now.
Yeah. It's just a matter of hitting, you know, pressing play on the content, and everything else stays the same. So
sure.
Yeah.
So I have a game on here that I like to play with my guests on some of the other pods that I do on here. Focus a lot on the Journey for Java, which is coffee driven, but you don't drink the coffee. So what we're going to do is I'm still going to run this little game called the Espresso Shot that we do, but I'm going to hit you with a couple of different questions here that are more Corinne based. All right. So we're going to do this and take as long as you need, but we're going to do this fast. So here we go. So this is the Espresso Shot with Corinne Lee, Rio Theater. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Corinne Lee's favorite movie?
The Lobster.
Why?
It just makes me laugh so hard that I cry every time I watch it. And it's just so hilarious.
Favorite actor and actress?
Oh, favorite actor and actress. I really love, I'm forgetting her name, but she played Polly in Peaky Blinders. So good. She just recently passed away, and I should know her real name, but I love her. She's amazing. Actor. Who's my favorite actor? I really was impressed with actually Cillian Murphy's performance in Peaky Blinders, but also Tom. What's his name? It's not Tom Brady.
Not Tom Cruise, not Tom Holland.
Anyways, he's in Peaky Blinders too, and he's awesome. I should know the name. I'm sorry.
I put you on the spot. It's okay. The go-to song for Corinne, anytime you hear that song, no matter what mood you're in, you are in a better mood after.
Blondie, anything Blondie. I love it.
Anything Blondie.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Your favorite show that's happened at the Rio.
Oh, it's hard to choose because there's so many good ones. I'd probably have to say Game of Thrones live, just because it's so crazy. You know, we've got everything from fire-breathing dragons to, you know, burlesque. We even do a poetry, a dirty haiku battle. So we get two different poets pretending to be R.R.L. Tolkien and George R.R. Martin and L.L. Anyways, the guy who wrote The Hobbit and the guy who wrote Game of Thrones, they compete and they do a dirty haiku battle. And it is so funny because they still have to keep within the syllables, but they, but it's supposed to be as dirty as they can. And it's just really, really funny.
Who's your go-to celeb on your speed dial if you need a hand? We need you down here now to do a stand-up set right now.
Yeah, you know what? Greg Sestero from The Room has become a really good friend of mine. And, you know, he's an interesting celebrity because he's not, you know, an A-lister or anything, but he through the wild, crazy world of The Room has met a lot of people and he's a lot of fun. And he understands the irony of fame and all of that. So I really enjoy him.
Two more questions. Your favorite Rio moment so far?
Favorite Rio moment, I guess, I'd say the Kevin Smith, you know, the two shows that he donated was pretty amazing because he had just recovered from having a heart attack. When he first donated these shows, he was perfectly healthy. Then he had the heart attack and we thought, oh, he's going to cancel for sure. Because, you know, who would expect, you know, someone who just survived a heart attack to show up? And he didn't cancel. He was like, nope, I'm still coming. So it was just so heartfelt, you know, to see him there. And, he's just such a great storyteller. He just told us all about his experience actually having, you know, had the heart attack. And he's, you know, he's a local film. He went to film school here in Vancouver. Yeah. He always brings it back to Vancouver and he's very supportive of the local community. So, he's a special guy and very inspiring.
Final question.
It's Tom Hardy. That's his name.
Tom Hardy. Right. Right.
Thank you.
You make this much money. Let me do this. You make this much money to run the Rio and all the things that go with it. You make this much money to do burlesque and they're both the same. Someone comes to you and says, you got to pick one. Which one is Corinne doing for the rest of her life if she gets paid the same to do both?
It's running the Rio.
It's running
the
Rio.
Hands down, running the Rio. I often say, you know, people are always trying to figure out what they want to do when they grow up. And I found it, you know, running the Rio is my favorite thing to do. You know, it's the community, it's the art, like, you know, the amount of art I get exposed to, whether it be film, music, you know, comedy, live performances is I feel so lucky. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's what's been so hard during the pandemic, because I feel like I've been, you know, I feel like I've been going through withdrawal. I need to get my fix of art again. So, and community and just being around people. So I cannot wait to get back at it. My favorite line about, you know, how I'm going to be after the pandemic is I say that, I'm coming back. We're myself and the Rio, we are coming back with a creative vengeance, because we've been held back too long. And so I can't wait to just let loose.
Amazing. So Shamelessly will remain your alter ego forever.
Yes. Yeah.
And Corinne Lee will remain as the runner of the Rio Theater for the rest of your life, which is a great thing. That's a great thing because you definitely you fought for that and have created an incredible space and a creative space and amazing space for this city. So it's awesome. So, all right. That's been the Espresso Shot with Corinne Lee, Rio Theater. We are almost that time, so I won't keep you too much longer. I know you've had a busy day. Basically, What's a day in the life for you right now?
Well, right now it's kind of fun because, you know, there hasn't been much going on for this past year. It's fun because we're, you know, fixing up our concession area. We're redoing our bar menu. So yeah, we're kind of sprucing things up and looking forward to, you know, getting ready for being open again. And so it's just fun. You know, the staff are coming back. Everyone's messaging each other, you know, finding out. Looks like pretty much all of our staff are returning, and that feels great. That, you know, because we pretty much feel like a family there. So it will be great to see everyone again. And yeah, so it's kind of like getting ready for a party. You know, feels fun.
Awesome. It's exciting. It's exciting to have this feeling of whatever it is we used to do.
Yeah.
Coming back.
Yeah.
I'm certainly super excited about it myself. So.
Yeah.
All right. Corinne, where can everybody find you online? I've been kind of posting stuff. I don't think I've forgotten anything. I got Twitter. I got the Rio at Rio Theater. But if anyone wants to support the Rio, any kind of information that you can pass on like now, it would be great. So I really want to.
Yeah. One great way to support the Rio right now is we do have our merch available online. You can buy it and it will get delivered straight to your house. We have the Rio Sports Bar t-shirts, which I was posing in my fishnets for. Fishnets are not included in the purchase.
No? Are you sure?
No, sorry. When you do, if you do get a t-shirt, we are asking people to take a selfie and share it because it just helps support the theater. And all the proceeds go to, you know, making sure that we keep our doors open. So you can find that on our website. There's a section called merch and you just click there and you can see, we also have other classic Rio t-shirts too, not just Sports Bar.
Awesome. 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 Well, friend, it's been a bit of a battle over the last little bit. I've been keeping an eye out and it's just one of the best things I like to see is when you win. So you're always fighting and to me you're always winning and I love it. So everyone, when you come to Vancouver, you got to go to the Rio. It's one of the best venues in the land. It's amazing. Nostalgic old, but they've got it. It's lovely. It's beautiful. Movies, music, you name it, everything is there. Stand up, burlesque, everything. It's the perfect place. So Corinne, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It's awesome to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, just so people know, we'll be a movie theater for the summer, but in September, that's when we're told, you know, if all goes well, that live shows will be back. So we're very excited for that to happen.
I myself am also standing by for that. So I can't wait to do that again. So anyways, that's Corinne. Thank you so much, friend. I'll let you go and
thanks a lot.
A couple of things here. So thanks so much for joining me this week on the Brenton on Tour podcast. Come back anytime. And I can't wait to hear how it goes once you get reopened and everything. So it's awesome. Thanks, cool. Friend.
Take care.
Bye. That's Corinne Lee. Amazing, amazing, amazing story. She has done incredible things for this city. She's doing just wonderful, wonderful things for the arts community, and she's fought and clawed and everything to keep that thing just hopping. I love that venue so much. So a huge thanks for her to making the time because I know she's so busy right now. So anyways, friends, that's been the Brenton on Tour podcast for this week. More guests as we continue on next week. I've got Tim Wendelboe, world champion AeroPress coffee roaster, who is like the best in the world. I love him, love him, love him. I got Casey Jo Lewis coming up, recently rehired into Radio World with C Fox. And I've got Katie from Nice Horse coming on too. So a lot of really, really cool guests, including the biggest guest I've ever booked. And he's a cast member on The Sopranos. So it's going to be great. A lot of fun there. Thanks, everybody. That is the Brenton on Tour podcast. I got to thanks my friends at Blue Microphones for the Blue Yeti X and the Mixfi headphones that you see right here. They have sent me this as well as the Logitech C920. That's right. We're in HD now, which is the best. Love that. And couldn't wait to get that kind of set up and ready to go. So, you know, my mug is not really the best for HD, but anyways, we're going with it. Anyways, thanks to my friends over at DeanBlundell.com as well, and all those guys over there for hosting the Brent's podcast, as well as the Kids on the Escalator podcast, which I do on Tuesday nights with my good friend Chris Machete. So tune in to that every Tuesday night. This comes out on Wednesday. So last night, it was all Kiss all the time with Brent Fitz and Todd Kearns from Slash's band. So go check out that episode as well. So yeah, that's what's going on over there. My friends at Partake, I haven't thanked them in a while. They sponsored the Brenton on Tour cast as well. This is non-alcoholic beer. It's really, really great. There you go. Have a look at that. They got the pale. They got the blonde. They got the red. They got an IPA. It's 10 calories and it's fantastic. So make sure you check that out as well. Thank you, everybody. It is the Brenton on Tour podcast for this week. We will see you next week on all the platforms. Thanks for listening, friends.
Hi, I'm Connie Thiessen, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at BroadcastDialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.
Kids, I'm your eager beaver.
And I'm Mr. Grizzly.
If you love politics
or hate politics,
then have we the perfect podcast for you.
The True North Eager Beaver.
Incisive political commentary.
We keep you up to date
and give you the political and media literacy you seek
to help you
cut through the bovine fecal matter.
Facts first.
Sound analysis.
Sometimes I growl.
Sometimes I sass.
We impart civics and build community.
And we share some laughs along the way.
Being informed
and engaged has never been more fabulous.
Or sexy. Catch us on the Dean Blundell Network or on our YouTube channel
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because democracy is something you do.